Good evening, listeners. Agus fáil to roimh illig. Welcome to a new show and a new year. May 2022 bring you good health, contentment, and later this year, continued participation with our Killer Inch Monday Club, Lacoon of Day. Hope that you are adapting well to the new year and enjoying the already noticeable stretch in the evening light. Congratulations to the winners of our free Christmas draw. Each of the following received a cash prize of €50. Dorothy Bullman, Olive O'Shea, Owen McGovern, Mary Cunningham, Margaret Lawton and Margaret Burns. Cogardicus. Congratulations also to Mary Byrne, winner of our December quiz. Mary won a €30 voucher to Fitzgibbon's Garage in Killa for naming the InterVarsity Hurling Trophy as the Fitzgibbon Cup. The prize for this month's quiz is a €30 voucher to Killa Pharmacy. Listen in to part two for the question. It came to our notice recently that Eddie Tucker of Roaches Point passed away. Eddie was a guest of ours, always speaking about weather lore. We offer our sympathy to his family. Just before Christmas, one of our long-standing members, with a very seasonal name, celebrated a special birthday. I refer to Noel Smith. So belated happy birthday, Noel. And for you we play Bright Blue Rose, written and sung by Jimmy McCarthy.
I skimmed across black water without one submerging on to the banks of an urban morning that hungers the first light much, much more than mountains ever do. And she, like a ghost beside me, goes down the keys of a dolphin and awakens unlearned, unshamed, unharmed. For she is a perfect creature, natural in every feature, and I am the geek with the alchemist stone. For all of you who must discover, for all who seek to understand, for having left the path of find a very special hand. And it is a holy thing, and it is a precious time, and it is the only way. Forget me nots among the snow, it's always been, and so it goes. Ponder his death and his life eternally. Path of one love, if find a very special hand. And it is a holy thing, and it is a precious time, and it is the only way. Forget me not among the snow, it's always been, and so it goes, to ponder his death and his life eternally. One bright blue rose outlives all those 2,000 years, and still it goes, to ponder his death and his life eternally.
As in recent shows, we bring you some archival material kindly passed on to us by Willie O'Mahony, a native of our parish and a stalwart supporter of community enterprise, be it sporting, historical or charitable. This evening's piece includes a poem, Fair Day in Killa, narrated by Mary Flavin Colbert. We follow this with a medley of songs, the singers being Fintan McCarthy with The Dawning of the Day, Fintan's cousin, the late Michal Lee, with Strawberry Beds, and Vincent Fitzgibbon with The Garden Where the Praties Grow, both of these accompanied by John Cunningham. Then, to complete this month's archival input, we have Vincent Fitzgibbon telling us about a memorable concert held in Mount Junior Call many moons ago.
At the fair here last Monday, my friend Mick O'Brien shook my hand and says he, "Den, 'tis you're looking fine. 'Tis long since I met you in y'all that fine day on Miss Fleming's coal yard down beside the broad bay." And we talked of the joys that past times lacked, and the days that with thrills and adventures were packed, and the friends whom we cherished in wealth and in woe, in our youthhood in Killa, so long, long ago. "Come over to the woods," said Mick with a smile, "and we'll sample a shot of his lubricant oil." Matt Maloney was standing across at Lynch's hall door. He joined us, Mick treated, and Matt said, "Encore." Our reinforced spirits were rising within, and I said we would have the same poison again. Then Wood said, "The house will now stand the next show, and we'll drink to old Killa as 'twas long ago." Moss Mead and Tom Seward were taking their wines, and we talked about Redmond's, Healy's, O'Brien's, and the rights and the wrongs of 1903, and we found that, as then, we could not agree. So we toasted our friends of high station and low, and we talked about Killa so long, long ago. The ESB lamps were alight on the street, and a guard was patrolling his regular beat, as arm in arm we walked through the town, dodging lampposts and things up and down. We accosted the guard, 'twas Cassidy too, and he said, "This is Tuesday, and 2:50. He hinted of sell if we home did not go. And that all happened in Killa not so long ago.
In a quiet street where all goes meet, I see her walking out. Away from me so hurriedly, my reason must allow that I had loved not as I should a creature made of clay. When the angel moved, or the clay loose from his wings at the dawn of day. Thank you.
Man.
Where the strawberry beds sweep down to the Liffey and kiss away the worries from my brow. I loved you well today, and I loved you more tomorrow. If you ever love me, Molly, love me now. 'Twas the only job I knew. It was hard, but never lonely. And the Liffey ferry made a man of me. Now it's gone without a whisper, forgotten even now. And it's over, Molly, over, can't you see? Come on now, everyone. Where the strawberry beds sweep down to the Liffey and kiss away the worries from my brow. I loved you well today, and I loved you more tomorrow. If you ever love me, Molly.
The late Dan O'Callaghan, the older people here would remember the late Dan O'Callaghan, who was a beautiful writer, and often done his articles in poem, or whatever you would call that. But there was one here, anyhow, I think might be worth, again, spending a moment or two about. It was called Mount Juniac Amateur Dramatic Society, if I can just read it here, please. It was a tribute to the members of their newly established society, that although the rain came down heavily, and with bitter intensity from the east on last Sunday night, a big crowd braved the storm in order to be present at their initial performance. The programme was attractive, being made up of a two-act play, a two-part concert, and a rollicking farce. It was quickly became evident that although it was the first appearance with many of them before the footlights, the actors were not in the least bit stage shy, and were all quite at home and thoroughly familiar with the characters they impersonated. A pleasing feature was the admirable way in which the staging was done. The scenes were well laid, and the very appropriate costumes, especially those of the ladies, were most suitable. The following were those who took part in the play and sketch, of whom did exceedingly well. And the names went on and included Michael Buds, Sean Fitzgibbon, John Millwright, William Welsh, and Patrick Welsh. Almost all did now, unfortunately. It went on then of the people who gave various songs. And there again, Michael Buds was the man who got the best praise as a singer.
As a thank you to Willie O'Mahony for the hours he has spent in searching for these archival pieces, we play Liam Clancy's Those Were the Days. Enjoy it, Willie.
Once upon a time, there was a tavern where we used to raise a glass or two. Remember how we laughed away the hours and dreamed of all the great things we would do. Those were the days, my friend. We thought they'd never end. We'd sing and dance forever and a day. We'd live the life we choose. We'd fight and never lose. We were young and sure to have our way. Lay, 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 And then the busy years went rushing by us. We lost our starry notions on the way. And if by chance we'd meet outside the tavern, we'd smile at one another and we'd say, those were the days, my friend, we thought they'd never end. We'd sing and dance forever and a day. We'd live the life we choose, we'd fight and never lose, for we were young and sure to have our way. Lay, 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 la la la, lay, la la la, lay, 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 lay. Just tonight I stood outside the tavern. Nothing seemed the way it used to be. And in the glass, I saw a strange reflection. Was that lonely fellow really me? Those were the days, my friend, we thought they'd never end. We'd sing and forever and a day. We'd live the life we choose, we'd fight and never lose, for we were young and sure to have our way. Then through the door I heard familiar laughter. I saw your face, I heard you call my name. Oh my friend, we're older but no wiser, for in our hearts the dreams are still the same. Those were the days, my friend, we thought they'd never end. We'd sing and dance forever and a day. We'd live the life we'd choose, we'd fight and never lose, for we were young and sure to have our way. Lie, lie, lie.
I recently met with Helen Kennedy, one of our hard-working Monday Club committee members, and she spoke with me about our Monday Club gathering last November, and also made reference to the late Sean Murphy. Joining me now is Helen Kennedy, and I have to say, unfortunately, Helen, we've had to stall our Monday Club activities once again. So, as a committee member, how did you feel that our gathering on November the 8th went?
Well, first of all, I think we should pay tribute to the rest of the committee because everybody put so much work and we had to have a lot of meetings with the uncertain times that we're living in, whether we could hold a Monday Club or not. But we did successfully on the 8th of November. And I think the people who came were wonderful. The way everybody cooperated with us. Now, it wasn't easy. I mean, you had Miriam asking for COVID certs and questions, but nobody objected, nobody complained, and everybody seemed very happy to be there, and we were very happy to have them. And don't give up hope, because we're coming back, and the Monday Club is coming back, and we'll all be back in a few months. Keep up your spirits, keep things up. We had a bit of a disappointment because we thought we would be able to go for our Christmas party in Blarney, but that couldn't work out. But things will come right. We've been through rough times before and things will come right. And keep on there and we'll be there for you in the new year. Please God, we'll all be there again.
Thanks for that, Helen. Now, another matter completely. Recently, the ashes of the late Sean Murphy were interred in Killer Cemetery and his name was placed on the family headstone. Surely that brings us to the end of an era.
Well, Sean was an era, and we have come to the end of an era. And I don't think we will ever again in our time have somebody like Sean Murphy. He wasn't just Killer. It was anywhere you went, Sean was involved in other things too, outside of Killer. And Tracy now, being involved in the GAA, would tell you better even than me. If people didn't know anybody else in Killer, they knew Sean Murphy. And I remember being, you know, Sean was involved in the Fine Gael, at a Fine Gael meeting one night, and John Bruton was brought down at the time. And he didn't know anybody at the meeting, but he did know Sean Murphy. And of course, Sean done wonderful work in our own community. And as recently as a few weeks ago, we had the community council AGM, and Anne O'Neill is our chairman, and we were thinking like what we would do, and she said, of course, Sean isn't here now to tell us the rules, because Sean knew everything, and you could go to Sean. He was very also involved in the GAA, in the hall. Of course, the hall to me was where Sean, I suppose he was instrumental in the building of it, and he was involved, and he really was dedicated to the hall and what went on there. And, you know, tried very hard and kept it going and kept it open. And anything else in the community, Sean was there, and you could always go to Sean. And he was there to help out. And in all the years when he wasn't able to get as much involved, he was there to tell you what to do or what we could be done there. Sean knew the answer. And Winton and Tira, of course, he was very involved in Winton and Tira. And the people there knew the same thing, like Sean was a legend to them as well. And I think Sean will always be remembered as the legend. And, you know, we'll talk about Sean Murphy. And then someone will say, Sean Murphy wouldn't like that. Something that's like when on his 70th birthday, I remember there was a tribute in the hall to Sean. And Tracy was asked to talk because she was coming up that time in the GAA. And she was said that there was some incident where she was collecting money at the hurling field. And some fella put his head out the car window and he says, Sean Murphy trained you well.
Right. Thanks, Helen, for that. I said we were at the end of an era, almost, because this community have plans to honour Sean and mark his life sometime in the spring when we're permitted to do that. So, meantime, all we say is, rest in peace, Sean Murphy. I recently saw Pascal Sheehy donate blood publicly on television. I am aware that one of our listeners, a very regular Monday Clubber, who has been a blood donor for the last 40 years, recently made her 80th donation. Congratulations. May your example encourage others to become blood donors. And now, a request for this particular donor and all blood donors. The Pizzicato Polka by Strauss, played by the Vienna Operatic Orchestra. Fáilte roimh thar nÉis. Welcome to part 2 of our January 22 Cilla Inch Monday Club radio show. Even though we are in COVID trouble for the second consecutive January, let's hope that matters will improve considerably before we get to that time, referred to in poetry as Teacht an Airig. And now for this month's quiz. In part 1 of this show, you heard the song Those Were the Days. Name the singer. I repeat, name the singer of the song Those Were the Days, which we played in part 1 of this show. Answers by text, please, before January the 25th to 087-631-9608. 087-631-9608. Now, before Christmas, George, Sean and I managed to waylay Patsy Irwin and record some of his memories of Killa in the early 1940s, of his working life and of his 65-plus years in the music business. This evening we bring you part 1 of our chat with Patsy, followed by Patsy himself playing his saxophone with that piece In the Mood, and he was accompanied by Ger Byrne. Part 2 of our chat with Patsy will follow in February, Lacoon of Day. Our community voice this month signed into our local history book, Killa Parish Through the Ages, as P.J. Irwin from Ballymacchie Moor, Killa. But for the purpose of this chat, we introduce him as Patsy Irwin, who, along with his wife Mary, are recent converts to Monday Club. And joining us as well are Sean McCarthy, George Fogarty, our recording technician, and Helen Kennedy. You're all very welcome. Pats, to begin with, you might recall for us your early family life, your school days, and your memories of Killa Village in the 1940s.
I don't remember an awful lot about when I was growing up, except it's pretty tough, you know, in those days. But I remember going to school all right, and I was sent to school by my mother at a fairly advanced age. I was about six, I'd say. And the rest of them were going at some, the village lads were going at 4 years of age. But my mother didn't bring me down. She was one of that stuff in our house. I mean, you did your own thing. Betty Landers brought me to school. Betty is now living in America, as we, some of us will know. But Betty brought me to the school and dropped me, and that was, from that on, I did my own thing, walked in the morning, walked home in the evening. And I remember the teachers. There were three teachers. This was the new school now. I missed going to the old school by a couple of years. The new school had opened, and it was a beautiful, wonderful thing at the time. And it had three rooms. And the first room, you had the baby infants and infants with Miss Brown. And the centre room was Miss Quirk. She was from Castle Martha. She had maybe, I suppose, third and fourth classes. And Michael Murphy, Sean Murphy's father, was the head teacher, and he was the final room on the left as you look at it from the road. But I remember Miss Brown when I was a small, going to school was a bit of a culture shock, like, you know, at the time. And I remember she was great for the Irish language, and she was a very nice person. But she used to line us up. She was also a religious person, and she used to line us up some mornings around the class, around the walls of the room, and we'd have to recite this little song. And if we said it once, we said it 100 times a day or more. You see, she was into religion, and at the time, Blessed Oliver Plunkett, as he was called, was, they were trying to bring him up to the stage where he'd be made a saint, you see. And she was always praying for this, like this. Blessed Oliver would become a saint in her lifetime. And here we were, she had this little poem for us, like, and we'd all be standing up against the wall. Blessed Oliver Plunkett, pray for us. Blessed Oliver Plunkett, pray for us. Blessed Oliver Plunkett, pray for us. Blessed Oliver. That went on maybe for, I say, 10 minutes. And surely, I believe he's a saint now. So yes, we did our job right, didn't we?
Very good, Pat.
We got through.
You did. Now, what do you recall about the village at that time as you walked from Lynch's area there over to the school? Anything specific about the village?
Well, the first thing you saw when you passed down Lynch's would be, you across me would be the old school, still standing in those days, before Ken and Kerry came along and demolished the same and put up the new wall with the coping, the pieces of concrete pieces on top of it. Then you had Conway's pub. You had the river as ever, and you had Hogan's Yard, where my father used to work, and my brothers and my uncle and myself afterwards.
Is Hogan's Yard now where Greywood Arts are, Patsy?
That's right, George. That's the place. That was Hogan's Timber Yard. He used to make windows and doors, carpentry and joinery, and cutting timber. I remember timber being sent to Hogan's from as far away as Tallaght, and a crowd used to bring it. I remember the lorries, a crowd called Henley's of Tallaght, used to bring down the timber to be cut. Often, these logs would be maybe 8 feet diameter, massive logs, and they were cut at Hogan's. The saw wasn't able to cut 8 feet, but what used to do was, you roll the log up onto the rack bench, as we call it, a movable bench that would move into the saw. We'd roll up the log, cut it to just beyond the halfway stage, roll down the log again, roll it back up, except this time you would have the uncut side below and the cut side above, and you would, the two, if the sawyer was good handed, like, and you had people like Shamie Loughlin and Ned Long, they were operatives and they were good. The logs would fall apart to halves.
Any other buildings that you can remember, distinctive buildings in the village at that time that you remember as a schoolboy?
I remember Patsy Kelly's was a wonderful place altogether. Patsy Kelly was Keeler House. Now, Mrs. Boyd, who was the proprietor of Hogan's Timber Yard, always had the idea that the barrack was Killer House, but the people disagreed with that, that Patsy Kelly's was really the Killer House. Now,
we'll go back to your work, starting life or work. You started off at Hogan, serving your time, did you?
I did, Sean, yeah. Before I was there, you're saying, just in case of walking in there, you know?
Yeah. And how long were you there then?
About 5 years, I'd say.
And you went back to sports calf, or was it the dockyard? I remember you going to the dockyard.
I went to sports calf first. Hogan's started to, you see, the wheels, my father, like, used to make the wheels with Hogan's helping him, of course.
For the caps.
For the butts and the traps. But the trouble was, people began to get cars, you see, and the horse-drawn traffic began to die out. And therefore, the wheel writing, the wheel making, began to die out. They diversified, Hogan's did. They made trailers for a while, but they were shot down. I mean, there were people who were into trailers long before Hogan's began, and they had more experience. So Hogan's began to fail, and it finally folded, and I got a job in sportscraft.
What's the story about the fair day minding the cattle then?
Oh yeah. That was about, I suppose, that would be in my early teens years. James Landers, a neighbour of mine, Dick Landers' son, James was into cattle selling, and I believe what used to call him was cattle jobbing. I mean, he didn't like rear them. He simply bought and sold and made a profit in doing so. And James was highly professional at this, like, he was good. And we'd go to the fairs, we'd go to Killer Fair, of course. I'd be employed as Tom Donohue called it, a cattle blocker. You know, keeping the cattle, like, from wandering all over the street. And we went to the All Fair. That was a tough one. You'd have to walk the cattle all the way in the morning. Middleton Fair, even worse. You'd have to walk the cattle up the McGill Road and get onto the new road in Churchtown North. And also Dungarvan. I think I was once or twice in Dungarvan Fair. But the blocking of the cattle was a mighty job altogether. In Killer, it was a right curse. You see, James would call me at about 4 o'clock in the morning. And he'd have a right good meal over at his father's house, mother's house, at maybe 4:30. And we'd head off up to Carew at 5, collect the cattle and head in for y'all. One of the things I remember especially about going to the All Fair. See, James was well organised. He had flash lamps and everything for the winter mornings, you see. And we'd be on our way in anyway. And one morning, for some strange reason, at about 6 o'clock, it was just getting bright, we met a fella coming out against us. Now, James usually had about 14, 15, 16 cattle. And this guy coming out against us, the cattle looked the same and about the same number. And of course, they got all mixed up. You can imagine now, three or four, but your man had nothing only a stick, and I believe he was a professional drover. He had nothing only a stick, he had no light. James had two flashlamps, one for me, one for himself. But there was, after a while, the language began to get rich anyway. Got the cattle, got excited. I was jumping over the ditch. And your man coming from the other direction clearly didn't know his own cattle. James knew his own. And he, after about a half an hour swearing and belting cattle with sticks and shouting, and the cattle were finally segregated. Anyway, when they were segregated anyway, the drover came up to James and he said, "Sir," he says, "would you count how many cattle are there?" So James counted his cattle anyway. He says, "You have 15 bullocks there," he says. "It's your man." And your man said, "Sir," he said, "would you tell me, is that more or less than 16? 17, sorry. He said, James said you was 15 there. And your man said, "Is that more or less than 16? He says, "Drover, like, professional." Couldn't count.
Right. Hello, Patsy, this is George here. I'd just like to ask you, you must have met a lot of many funny characters during your walking life. Do you recall in particular any entertaining individuals?
Well, I met quite a few in my time. The numbers in Killer were small at Hogan's. There was a bigger number in Castle Martyr people, but the dockyard, the shipyard in Cove, there was 1,000 people there, and you would meet a lot of different folk, like, you know. There was one or two people that I haven't forgotten at all. There was one particular fella there. He was from the north side of Cork City, and he was very funny, and he used to keep on repeating this little song maybe 100 times a day, and you'll be sick of it in the end, like, you'll listen to this little song. But the little song went like this: "Oh, she used to boil the turnips in the pot, she made her poolie, and she used to boil potatoes in the very same pot. Diddly yodel dodel dodel, diddly yodel dodel dodel, diddly yodel dodel dodel, diddly yodel dodel dodel. Oh, she used to boil the turnips in the pot, she made a poolie, and she used to boil the potatoes in the very same pot. Diddly yodel dodel dodel, diddly yodel dodel dodel, diddly yodel dodel dodel, diddly yodel dodel dodel." That's it.
Surely, Patsy, you'll meet more than the fellow with the pot. Down in the
backyards. Yeah, the place is full of them. Because a lot of them are from Cork City and all over the country, really. There was a fellow from Wexford, Harry Murphy. But his language is fairly colourful, so we better keep it back from Harry's songs. But anyway, there was this particular fellow. When I went to the dockyard first, there was very little work in the captain's joiner shop. Mostly what we were sent doing, first of all, most of us, the newcomers, we were sent out to a place that was nicknamed the Congo. Now, the Congo at the time, there was Irish troops based in the Congo, so the Cork City crowd, like, were great at names. And this was a rough place, like, down by the shores of the River Lee. So it was called the Congo. And if we were sent to the Congo, like, it was kind of the worst thing could happen to you, because it was rough down the winter. But anyway, there was this little Dan, and Dan was in charge. He wasn't a joiner or a carpenter, but he was in charge anyway, like. And he used to love being in charge, like, you know, especially love being in charge of the carpenters, keep them in their place, you see, in case they were uppity or anything about their status in life, as compared with builders, labourers, or whatever. There was a lot of that in those days. But anyway, next thing, anyway, of course, with 1,000 people employed, you'd be paid on Friday, but you wouldn't be paid in the one spot. There were what they called payout points. There might be a dozen. There'd be a payout point here or there, and everyone knew where the payout points were. So anyway, this Friday anyway, at 4 o'clock, Dan calls us all together out in the Congo. And by the way, what we were doing in the Congo was making concrete piles for slipway number two. You see, there was already a slipway with a ship on it, the start of the ship. And we were making the piles, 2.5 feet square concrete, with reinforced concrete and a steel point. They were about 20 feet long, about 2.5 feet square. And there'd be a whole lot of them there, maybe 50 or 60 after a week's work. They'd have to be left dry for a week before they'd be used, see that crack open. But anyway, Dan anyway called us all over. He was up, standing up in the piles, and we were all around the circle. Now he says, there's a change, he says, to the payout points, he says. He says, and listen carefully, because if you got the wrong payout point, your envelope won't be there. So we all listened anyway. And then starts off, he says, payout point one, he says, it'll be alongside the clock and in box, the clock in clock. And payout point number two will be down by slipway number one, and so on. And when Dan was finished anyway, he says, no, he says, you've all got your destructions, he says, and every man will go to his respectable place.
Thank you.
club endeavoured to provide a limited platform of activities for members throughout the past autumn and early winter. One of those was communal singing, where the Cork Education and Training Board sent out a coordinator, Fintan Lucy. For his last visit, George recorded a few songs sung by a small group of Monday clubbers and accompanied by Fintan.
You are my sunshine, my only sunshine. You make me happy when skies are grey. You never know, dear, how much I love you. Please don't take my sunshine away. The other night, dear, as I was sleeping, I dreamed I had
My thanks to you all for listening, to our contributors, and to Linda at CRY for her patience in sewing together this show. Slán go fóill.